When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is a Tuesday edition on the program. We are happy to be with you. Jacob Albracht, Tommy Kester alongside you here. And we are ready to rock and roll. It's a playoff baseball game day, baby. And we are going to get you primed up for it. A part of that will be Kings of Kauffman Royals insider Mike Gillespie joining us in about a half hour to get you ready for the postseason. Everything we expect. Will we see Vinny Pasquantino? All kinds of good stuff. We may get some notes on that before the end of the show today. You'll hear that game at 2:30. Pregame coverage begins here on KFH. We've got Chiefs insider Dan Israel joining us at the top of the hour as we continue to wait and see on Rashee Rice. We'll have the latest there in just a few minutes, and then we'll get Dan's take on everything. Looking ahead, how do they react if he is out for some time? What does he think they'll do in the trade market? That'll all come at the top of the next hour for you. The IHOP hotline is open at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP. Celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP house faves. All your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. You can also get in touch with the program via the Odyssey app. We know a lot of people listen to us that way. If you're listening to us presently or in the future, you can leave us a voice message. There's a little microphone on there. You just click it. Leave us a message, send it. Jad gets those. So that's open for you, as well as your video comments on 12 News Plus Connected and on Facebook, YouTube, and X. All kinds of different ways to get in touch with the program. We'll give away a little HTO later in the show as well. Tommy, it's a game day. We're all jacked up. It's been a while. Your Braves made it in. It is postseason baseball time, and that means something to us here in Royals Kingdom.
Yeah, do you mind if I break a little news here as we come off the top? So Jeff Passan is reporting that Vinny Pasquantino will return to the lineup today and will bat.
I knew it.
He will bat third in the wild card matchup versus Baltimore. He reported that 2 minutes ago. The Royals actually tweeted out a graphic of looks like Vinny Pasquantino's hands holding a bat. So
yeah, the Royals reporting it. The Royals are reporting that what we expected. Look, we told you we both thought this would happen yesterday, but it's the official word. Vinny is back. Where he is placed, we will keep an eye on it. I would imagine DH, which means Salvi will probably get the start at catcher. That's what I would do for now. But who knows? Maybe he's fine to play defensively too, but I wouldn't risk that. So that is fantastic news. Again, we'll get Mike Gillespie's take on that and just a pretty impressive rehab. But look, giggling Vinny in the celebration, I think, told us this. He was like, I can't say anything. I can't say. But, you know, what can you say without saying it out loud? This has been in the cards. And it does totally change things, Tommy. This went from one of the more, if not the most dynamic middle of the lineups in baseball that was as productive as any team in baseball through those three hitters, leading the Royals to having really one of the top offenses in baseball, to going totally anemic when he got hurt. So now you also add Tommy Pham's potential, his experience in the postseason at the top. Feeling good. I'm feeling good. Yeah. I mean, we don't know what Vinny's got. I mean, it's hard to say he's going to come back and be the guy that was going to hit well over 100 RBI and all those things. He's coming off of a broken thumb. You kind of need your thumb to swing a bat. But the fact that he's back is a good sign, and it makes this a completely different offense. And the other thing is, just psychologically, don't you think that's a jolt of energy for this team? It feels good right now.
Yeah, 100%. And the fact that they were able to, you know, sort of get their rotation set the way that they would want it to be set for the series in Baltimore, that's big as well. I've just been kind of looking over the Royals released their 26-man roster for this particular series and looking at who's on the roster, who's not. Of course, Vinny Pasquantino is on the roster. Alec Marsh is not. Carlos Hernandez is not. Robbie Grossman is not. So as far as position players, Pasquantino swapped in for Robbie Grossman, but Alec Marsh and Hernandez are the two pitchers that have, you know, had quite a bit of run with the Royals this year that are not on the wild card roster.
That's really interesting about, I think, for me, Marsh as much as anybody else. Give me the names again.
That didn't make it on?
That aren't there? Grossman, Marsh.
Grossman, Marsh, and Hernandez are the three highlights, yeah. The three main players that did not make it on the roster.
So what that tells us is they don't plan on going to Longman, and if they do, Daniel Lynch can be that guy. It's interesting. It's interesting. But the other thing we have to remember is, you know, Lorenzen might start a fourth game in a series, probably would, or he becomes a long reliever. I'll be curious to see how they hit. And they kept Brady Singer too.
Remember, this is just the wild card round roster. So, you know, they can reset, you know, so this is going to be a best of three, right? And so you can really shrink your roster down, go with potentially fewer starting pitchers, obviously, because you're only going to need three. So, I mean, that makes sense, you know, as to why Alec Marsh is not on that roster. They're going to roll with the bullpen of Bubich, Ursig, Long, Lynch, Schreiber, and Zerpa. Those are the main relievers. Now, of course, Lorenzen and Singer, also Waka, are on the roster as well. Would be guys that, you know, in a deciding game or whatever, that, you know, they could come in if the starter, you know, has some issues.
That's part of what I mean. Like what I don't know is, even in a long series, if you're gonna roll with Singer and Waka or Lorenzen, like one of those guys can be that emergency long. They don't, and it sucks for Alec Marsh because he's been a big part of what this team's done. They don't really need to put him on the roster. Like Well, even in the divisional round, I mean, I don't think that'll change much, because that's telling you now you're to your third long man at that point, and that would be a problem. I'd be curious to see who they would start in a game four situation. We surmised that Singer probably would get passed by Lorenzen.
But like, are you talking about in a division series? Like, if they got
in
to
a
that
long,
point?
In a, yeah, in a because longer
they,
I mean, series.
They, remember, they can reset the roster again for the next series.
What I'm saying is, I don't think they're going to reset the roster. I think they'll just keep it. I don't think Marsh is going to be on there either way, because what are you going to do with him? Right? Either Singer or Lorenzen is going to do what you would expect Marsh to do, and you have Lynch. Marsh probably just doesn't make the roster in any postseason series unless there's an injury. That's what I'm saying. And then and we won't know yet. Well, they'll have to, you know, you don't want to count your eggs, but if they get through this series, that game four situation will be really interesting to see the way the Royals went, because Lorenzen's in theory been better than Singer, but Lorenzen also has a lot of experience as a reliever if they needed him in that way. But, you know, hopefully we don't find out, because these starts are great from Reagans and Lugo and Waka. And as exciting as today is with the Vinny Pasquantino news, Tommy, let's not forget it's Corbin Burns on the other side tonight. So, you know, it has the feel of something that should be very low scoring. The over-under on the game is 6.5. That's crazy. 6.5. Would you take the over on 6.5? Because I don't think I would.
I think it just depends upon how fired up, how jacked up the Royals offense is.
I mean, I wouldn't take the under either. But
yeah, I would stay away from that entirely.
Yeah, I would too. I'm just saying, like, all of this excitement and everything around Vinny, like, you're hoping in a best case, I think, if you're a Royals fan today, you're hoping you get, what, three runs in the first six innings of this game, and that you would feel, I mean, you'd be ecstatic about that. And at that point, you'll have to have, you know, Cole Reagans step in and also be an ace, which that's what he's here for. God, this is I love this so much. I love this so much, Tommy. It has been too long for this. It was funny listening yesterday. I was putting sound together just and I was like, okay, well, the obvious thing for me is you've got the young star in Bobby Witt Jr. getting his first chance at this. And then you've got the old guy, Salvador Perez, getting his first chance in what feels like a lifetime. First thing out of both of their mouths were exactly that. Bobby was like, oh, I've dreamed of this since I was a kid. And Salvador Perez opened with, man, I feel old. It's a really cool dynamic that they have. It's postseason baseball, everybody. Get ready, baby. Get ready. Here we go. 3 o'clock today. You'll hear it right here. We've got Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, coming on in about 18 minutes from now to help us break it down. Let's take a quick Royals break since we'll have that. We'll get you the latest on everything to do with Rashi Rice and the Chiefs. Now we have kind of conflicting reporting, maybe a little bit, maybe another, maybe another trade candidate that's out there. We'll talk about it. We'll get to some Chiefs news here, and then we'll have Dan Israel topping next hour as well. Give us a call. Royals fans, how you feeling this morning? 869-1240. We'll come right back. We'll talk a little Chiefs before we hit our Royals insider next. Mornings at KFH, we enjoy some Prairie Fire coffee. Appreciate Prairie Fire for keeping us fueled up here at the KFH studios all across the Odyssey studios. All right, we're talking, it's just all kinds of a hype day. It's so exciting. We got playoff baseball back. You'll hear it here with us on KFH. We're excited. We're jacked up. Here we go. Corbin Burns. We'll get into all of it with Mike Gillespie in about 11 minutes. Tommy, before we do that, Monday Night Football last night, the two-game thing strikes again. It's unfortunate Dolphins-Titans was, you know, so injury-ridden because that would have normally been a good game. But it wasn't. But we still had the doubleheader. I am totally in on the doubleheader thing. I love it. In fact, I hope they do it forever and always. Seahawks-Lions was really, 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 really good, though. I joked with you last night. There are times often in this, I wish I was a Lions fan. I think the Lions are so cool and so fun. I think their players are cool. I think their coach is cool. I love their style of football, but they look good. Seattle, actually, and I know the score got away from them a bit at the end. I thought Seattle looked pretty good, too. I thought that on the road in that environment, I thought they held themselves well. I think they're probably for real. But that was a pretty entertaining game. But the Lions get the best of it. I think the thing that we all take away from it is what you texted me about this morning, and it's the question of, well, what about Tyreek Hill as a trade option for the Chiefs? And I think we all think about that. At the surface, I would wonder. I mean, Tua's coming back. I think Tua's coming back. So I don't know. I don't think Tyreek Hill's going to be available. But even if he was, the Chiefs didn't want to pay him the first time. I doubt they'd want to pay an older version of him. You know, like I don't think they'd go down that road.
Well, I don't think that they, I mean, he's under contract right now with the Dolphins, at least for this particular season. And I looked this up last night as there was some speculation flying around that, you know, potentially he could be on the trade market. The Dolphins converted all but $1.2 million of his 2024 salary into a signing bonus. And so All of that like goes away. The Chiefs would only be responsible for $1.2 million in salary, which is under the cap.
This year,
they'd have to restructure his contract for the 2 years after this season that he has remaining on his contract, 2025 and 2026. But going back to, I remember you mentioned this yesterday about needing some sort of long-term answer in case Rashi Rice is out for a long extended period of time. I would imagine And I know that Tyreek Hill wants to get paid. I get all of that. But I would imagine him with the prospect of coming back to Kansas City, reuniting with Patrick Mahomes, I think he'd be a little bit more willing now than he was, what, 3 years ago, as far as a contract and as far as money, you know, is concerned. It's kind of like that redemption story, a little bit kind of like what we've seen with Kareem Hunt coming back to the Chiefs. So is it likely? Probably not. But the Dolphins are not good. They did not look good last night. I would imagine that regardless if they ride with Tyler Huntley or Skylar Thompson in the absence of Tua, they're not going to be good offensively. Mike McDaniel said after the game last night that everything is on the table offensively. So, you know, I don't know what the prognosis is long-term for Tua. The Dolphins are very close to being irrelevant and being out of it in the AFC. So at that point, why not take a swing and see what you can get in return for Tyreek?
Well, I think from what I can see, Tua got a very positive report, it sounds like, from neurologists, and he could
great.
Be back as at great, the
great.
So if he's back, the Dolphins aren't punting on the season in week five.
Okay, still, like, if you're the Dolphins, wouldn't you rather, at least in my opinion, wouldn't you rather try to, you know, stock up on potential draft picks or whatever that looks like in the future? And then, because you know that regardless if Tua has a good, you know, prognosis right now, this has happened multiple times. You need to start to have a game plan on what the Dolphins' future post-Tua starts to look like, I think. I think you need to have that contingency plan. The only way they can have that contingency plan is to start to maybe move some players out and, you know, start to acquire that draft capital in return.
I don't know. I think it's a question a lot of teams have. If you told me Tua is coming back in a week or two and I'm the Dolphins, then no, I'm not trading Tyreek Hill yet. I mean, he's far from needing to be. You're still going to be for 3 years. So no, I don't think I'd trade him if I was there. Because at that point, just trade Tua, right? And trade Jalen Waddle and trade everybody. At that point, blow it up.
I don't think anybody's going to trade for Tua. I mean, you know, as far as like a quarterback needy team, I think that it'd have to be some, you know, another team that.
Dolphins are inclined to blow this up. I don't think they're inclined to do that. I think if anything, they'd be more inclined if they decided to do something else to go find a different quarterback, right, in the offseason, go try to find a free agent, do that sort of thing. When you have Waddle and Tyreek and Achan, and they got a lot of good young players. And I know their quarterback is hurt and their backups have been able to handle it. And Skylar Thompson's better than the alternative, and he has been hurt a lot. But I would be stunned if the Dolphins are ready to do something like that now. I just don't think there's any way. Then it and if they did, would the Chiefs be interested?
I would also be
surprised by that.
I don't think it's likely.
The Chiefs could have kept Tyreek Hill without giving up draft capital, and they didn't do it. So
For a lot more money than probably what he's going to garner today at the age of 30.
But they still owe him the rest of the money, right?
Yeah, you'd have to restructure that contract to make it work for the Chiefs.
At some point, you've got to pay him. They have not shown us that they want to pay wide receivers that way.
I don't think that it's likely. I mean, I go back to what I said yesterday about the MO typically of Brett Veach and the way that he acquires players and what that looks like. So knowing all of that, yeah, no, it's not likely. It's kind of a pipe dream. It's a fun pipe dream to think about. It's more fun for me to speculate on that particular option than any of the other names that have been floated out.
I would call if I was Veach. I'd give him a call. Heck yeah. But the problem is, if we're looking at Veach's history, we know he's not afraid to trade a first-round pick. We know he's not afraid to invest high draft capital in a wide receiver either. He's drafted a receiver in the second and the first round the last 2 years. Sky Moore was a second, yes?
Yeah.
Was he a second?
Yeah.
So for 3 years now, they've invested first or second-round picks in wide receivers. We've also seen him trade first-round picks for Frank Clark and Orlando Brown. He's not afraid of either of those things. That's why I think a splash trade is on the table. But what he hasn't shown us is at any point, a desire to pay wide receivers. And so that's where it gets really interesting for me.
And there's going to be, I think, more time that passes before the Chiefs do anything. And even with the Dolphins. So you mentioned like not punting on the season in week five. I totally agree with that. They're not trading Tyreek Hill today or tomorrow. It would be something where, you know, Tua goes down in week two. They place him on IR. He's got to set out a minimum of 4 weeks. So once you get through week six, then at that point, I mean, you know, they're going to be without him for sure through week six. If the Dolphins are 1-5 at that point through week six, it might be a little bit of a different conversation for Mike McDaniel in Miami on what they want to do. Also, the Chiefs don't yet have clarity on exactly what's happening with Rashee Rice. So I can't imagine that they would jump on and do a huge splash move, regardless of who it is, right now until they know for sure exactly what they're facing.
That's correct. And we'll get into that, too. Just by the way, the Dolphins play the Patriots and the Colts in their next two games. With their issues on those two teams, those are still winnable for them, I think.
Dolphins looked really bad last night offensively.
I know. They may get Skylar Thompson back before they get Tua back, and they're much better with Thompson than they were last night. Real quick, on that Rashee Rice note, just because we want to put that out there. So what has happened with that is since we left the show, really this happened like late afternoon yesterday, we did not get the update from Andy Reid that he was done for the season. Okay, so that happened. And then we were like, okay, well, that's a little strange. He said they need more testing. And then the reporting later in the afternoon was that Rice is looking for a second opinion. That's a little bit confusing for a couple of reasons, so bear with me. A, it's a second opinion usually means you didn't like the first opinion, right? Which would probably tell me, like, is there any way we can make this thing work? Or it's maybe not as bad as they feared once they got in there and took those x-rays, and they're trying to see what their options are. So, I mean, it's missed time either way. How much? That'll get interesting. We'll get with that with Dan Israel. And don't forget, he's got a suspension looming, too. That's why these trades become, I think, more front of mind, is no matter what, Rice is going to miss significant time. But we'll get into all of that as we talk Chiefs with Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider. When we return, our Royals insider, Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, he's going to stop by. We will get you all primed up for postseason baseball. It starts today. That's next on Sports Daily.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you on a Tuesday, on a Royals baseball playoff Tuesday. The Royals are in the playoffs. It's available for free right here on KFH and on the Odyssey app. Tune in to 97.5 FM, 1240 AM, KFH at 2:30 for pregame coverage. Royals at Orioles. You can simply download the Odyssey app and search for KFH at game time as well. We welcome in Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, our Royals insider. Mike, it's been a long time, but it's here. The Royals are back in the postseason. They get the big news today with Vinny Pasquantino this morning. It's made official what we all sort of suspected for the last little while. I guess let's start there. What do we expect out of Vinny Pasquantino, and how much of a jolt is that for this Royals team?
Well, I think, you know, psychologically, it's got to be a big jolt. You know, he's been traveling with him and whatnot. He just started hitting it publicly, at least, out in the cage. And if he's ready to go, and you have to believe he is, he's too much a part of the Royals' future for them to just say, okay, we need a bat, we're going to take a risk with Vinny. I'm convinced he's ready to go. Now, does that translate into some home runs and RBIs? We're going to find out, and I think we'll get a really good look at him today. But it's a big deal. It really is.
It's interesting, Mike, because I had this thought, the other day before it was even, confirmed or I think it was being speculated that Pasquantino might be able to return to the roster and to the lineup for this potential wild card series. Obviously, now they're in it and he's been confirmed. But I had this thought at the time, even if they add him to the roster and they put him in the lineup and he just stands there and he's not 100%, I mean, even having the threat of him in the lineup should take some of that pressure off of Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez. So I feel like there's even a potential impact that Vinny can have, even if he's not hitting those home runs and driving in those runs like you mentioned.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, they've got Baltimore has Corbin Burnes going today. And, you know, the guy's won 15 games this season. He's a proven winner, proven veteran. But I don't imagine when he learned this morning that Vinny was going to be back in the lineup that he probably greeted that with a big smile. Not unless he wants to challenge him, but it is really a significant development for this team.
Let's talk about the pitching, Mike. Corbin Burnes has been lights out in September. He has been a good postseason pitcher in totality. He wasn't very good last year in his postseason start. It hadn't been for the Orioles yet. What do you expect there? I guess you have to expect the good version of Corbin Burnes, and do you think at that point that Cole Reagans can match him today?
Well, that's a great question. Baltimore couldn't have a better guy starting the first game of this series. Which puts, I think, some additional pressure on Reagans. You know, Reagans is kind of deceptive. He's not all that overwhelming, but he just seems to get through the games fairly well. So I foresee a pretty, a classic pitcher's duel today. But, as soon as I say that, we'll probably see 20 runs.
It's funny, Mike, because I didn't realize this until just the other day. And Jacob and I discussed it on the show yesterday about how the Kansas City bullpen, which has been much maligned all season long, and we've had these conversations even with you about the bullpen and their struggles. In the last 2 weeks of the regular season, the Kansas City bullpen posted the second best ERA out of all bullpens in Major League Baseball. Clearly, while it was a struggle offensively for the Royals in the final 2 weeks and actually the final month of the season, it really seemed like that bullpen was the stabilizing factor and something that, they absolutely should, be looking to lean on as they get into the Baltimore series. Do you anticipate or imagine that they can continue this run that they've had over the last couple of weeks?
Well, if there's one thing besides this kind of dormant offense right now that bothers me, it's definitely the bullpen. They're pitching well at the right time. The timing couldn't be better. But they still, you look over your shoulder and you still see almost an entire season of trouble and inconsistency. We're going to find out. And it's kind of an all hands on deck type situation now. But if the bullpen can do what they've done lately, that takes a tremendous amount of pressure off the starters, especially when the Royals are going with a three-man rotation. And I think if they make it to the ALDS, I think you're going to see a similar situation. I don't think they'll stay in a five-man rotation. So bullpen's got to come through.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. The back end of the bullpen, I mean, the bullpen was – what do you make of the bullpen? Because it was really good at down the home stretch there. I believe second-best bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball. What do you think's closer to the truth as far as the bullpen? That they're that good or that they're the bullpen we've seen throughout the rest of the regular season?
As much as I hate to say it, I think the bullpen is probably what we've seen most of the season. And, the only change they've really made to the bullpen, besides putting Lorenzen and Singer out there for this series, is Hernandez didn't make the division or the wild card roster. Neither did Alec Marsh. I'm not too concerned about that, but I'm going to be surprised if they can sustain what they've done for the last few weeks through the next couple of weeks.
Taking a look back at the lineup, obviously having Vinny Pasquantino there in the middle of the lineup is a major impact for Kansas City throughout the entire playoff stretch. But some of the other additions that, the Royals have made, and we've talked about them at length over the last few weeks, whether we're talking about Tommy Pham or Yuli Gurriel, those guys in theory provide reinforcements in the lineup. For Kansas City, you add in Michael Massey, if he can get going like he did in the final game of the regular season against the Braves. Hunter Renfroe, if he can get going as well. There's still some pop in that lineup. And I guess specifically, if Vinny Pasquantino, assuming he is DHing it's kind of become a question, I think, that's been heavily debated entering this wild card series. Do you think it's a better position for the Royals to be in, assuming that Pasquantino DHs, to have Salvi catch and Yuli Gurriel play first, or have Salvi play first and Freddie Fermin catch?
Boy, that's a great question. I think it's better with Perez at first and Fermin behind the plate. Now, that said, Freddie's had some throwing issues the last week or so, which it really surprised a lot of people. I mean, that's usually one of his great strengths. But maybe they'll prove me wrong, but I think you start Perez at first right now and Freddie behind the plate.
That's interesting. But where does it leave Vinny Pasquantino?
DHing.
DH.
But if... Yeah, I think... I would say just let Salvi catch, Vinny play DH, and...
Gurriel?
I don't know. Gurriel,
like,
yeah.
That's the big debate on what's going to be better.
Yeah.
Because I think we're all assuming, and we won't know until we get to that point, that Pasquantino's going to DH, you know, as opposed to playing first base, at least in this wild card series. I've gone back and forth on that. Like, is it better?
Because
Fermin has not hit very well recently.
I know, but doesn't Fermin's attitude and persona scream postseason baseball to you? Like, I know the hits haven't come, but like his attitude feels right. It's almost like a Tommy fan.
I think
thing.
The argument for Gurriel a little bit is that Gurriel's been there before. Gurriel's right. been in yeah. many yeah. different postseasons before and can, you know, maybe help them attitude wise, you know, with his experience in the postseason. That's why I go back and forth on it. And you know, Mike, I think following up on what you said, it's interesting because Fermin has been pretty rock solid behind the plate until recently, where, you know, you mentioned he's had those throwing issues. But if you're talking about, you know, potentially the speed that Baltimore has, maybe that upside of having Fermin behind the plate to try to limit them on the base paths could be another benefit to having him catch and Salvi play first.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, Salvi's always been great at gunning runners down on the base paths, but I think at least this season, Freddie's kind of passed him in that regard. But, you know, who's going to catch and who's going to play first right now is probably the biggest and most interesting debate fans can have leading into this afternoon and even after this afternoon. It's a fun debate.
Let's talk about the top of the lineup, because we know what the middle has looked like this year with Vinny there. It's been as productive, if not the most productive, over that course. Yeah, you were going to have three guys reach 100 RBIs, all those things. I want to talk about Tommy Pham, though, because they didn't have that when they had that middle of the lineup. They didn't have that experience. I think he could be a big factor here. He has had so many big moments in postseasons and all these things. As a table setter, if Vinny's all the way back, that's a different wrinkle for this offense. Because that was the problem most of the season. Who's going to be the leadoff hitter? They just were not productive there. Whereas now it feels like they can be.
Yeah, I agree. I think Pham, this is the kind of thing they got Pham for. You know, add a little fire, get to the playoffs, bat him leadoff. And if he comes through, that's just a big thing for the Royals. If he doesn't, you know, you might see, as we go along, Garcia back at the top. But I think Pham's the guy right now.
Yeah, I wonder, Mike, too, you know, and Pham has provided a little bit of consistency at the top of the lineup as far as knowing who your leadoff batter is going to be. I was a little bit surprised, and I understand kind of the one-for-one swap of Pasquantino in and Robbie Grossman out. If it were me, the only change I would have made is I might have kept Robbie Grossman in and not had either Adam Frazier or Garrett Hampson on the wild card roster, just because I know those guys, I guess, defensively can bring something to the table, but they're basically, in my mind, kind of the same player, and neither one of them give you much, you know, at least offensively.
Definitely. You know, as I was kind of thinking through all this last night and trying to think of, you know, what are they going to do with this roster? It became really apparent to me that of those three, Grossman, Hampson, and Frazier, somebody had to go. And you know, you're right. Is there that much difference between those three? The difference is as you mentioned, the defensive versatility. So I wasn't surprised to see Grossman go. But yeah, you're not, they're in there to move around the field. Yeah. They're not in there to get big hits.
I'm going to give you one, put on your predictive cap here, Mike. Will we see Lorenzen in this series?
In this one. Yeah. Only
that wouldn't be good.
I foresee him in the first situation. If they get in trouble early,
right?
If Cole Reagans gets in trouble early today, you're going to see Michael Lorenzen. If Reagans gets him through the fifth, you know, then you're into the Daniel Lynch, Ursig, those guys. But I don't see Lorenzen, you know, coming in the eighth or ninth. He's going to be there if they get in trouble early.
That's trouble. I guess the reason I ask that is, do you want to see him? Like, do you like that he's there? Would you rather see him? Would you rather have a quick hook? I suppose is the point of that question. Do you think Quatraro should have a quick hook knowing that he's got Lorenzen there? But if he has a quick hook today, can he have Lorenzen tomorrow? I guess he'd have Lynch, but you know what I mean? Like, how quickly should Quatraro be ready to yank a starter in any of these three potential games if there's trouble in the first handful of innings?
Well, when you look at this Baltimore lineup, I mean, you've got Santander with 44 homers, Henderson with almost 40, Kowser with almost 25. He's got to be willing to make a quick hook. You know, if the Royals get behind 3-0, 4-0 in the first or second, you know, this is a situation where he's got to go get the starter. He just can't say, okay, maybe they'll get straightened out. The offense isn't good enough right now to get behind by a lot of runs and then try to play catch up. So he's got to be willing to make a move early.
But if he does it today, I mean, are we good with Lynch? I suppose. I guess he can do it twice. I know Marsh didn't make it, but he's got really two options there. Without Marsh and Hernandez, those are two of your long guys. And they can, who cares? It's all on the table, right? It's postseason baseball. Mike, what do you guys have going at Kings of Kauffman to get us ready?
I'm sorry?
What do you guys have going at Kings of Kauffman right now to get us ready for the series?
right about about the postseason. That's
follow Mike on social media, all the work at Kings of Kauffman. We've waited a long time for this. They got here. Let's get it done. We're not that far away from playoff baseball back with the Royals. Mike, enjoy it. We'll hopefully be back here next week to talk about the next series of this thing.
Sounds good to me.
There goes Mike Gillespie. You can find it at Kings of Kauffman. This is one of the reasons I love baseball, Tommy, is because baseball is the longest, like, who cares about individual decisions kind of season until you get to this point, and then you haul out that microscope and we way hyperanalyze every decision made within a baseball game. At the end of the day, it's all about execution, right? Like, managers, poor managers this time of year just get killed. But the reality is, if a pitcher makes a pitch or doesn't make a pitch, like, you know, what are you going to do? Real quick breaking news before we break and get our Chiefs insider Dan Israel in next segment. You sent this to me. Pete Thamel reporting that Gonzaga is set to join the Pac-12 today, an announcement coming soon. It's pretty fascinating, actually, for me. I will say this for the Pac-12. They really missed the boat on salvaging football. They're doing a pretty good job of making themselves a really good basketball league.
I think that's, you know, absolutely the direction that they're going. And clearly they sold Gonzaga on this vision of being potentially a future powerhouse in college basketball. You know, remember, there had been multiple, I guess, reported conversations and discussions between the Big 12 and Gonzaga over the last probably what couple of years, you know, between Brett Yormark and the folks at Gonzaga about adding them. And for Gonzaga to decide that they wanted to go to the Pac-12 tells me, what I read into that is that the Pac-12 is, pardon the pun, punting on football, being a football conference that you can hang your hat on and wanting to compete in that world on the West Coast nationally with the other large four conferences. They've clearly sold Gonzaga on this vision of being a hoops powerhouse, and that must be the priority for them.
And it will be, joining San Diego State there, Utah State. They're going to be a really good basketball league. What's been really interesting about it to me is that the football-centric schools are choosing not to go. I mean, look, Colorado State and Fresno State are football schools, but like seeing UNLV stay is interesting. Seeing, according to reports, Memphis and Tulane rebuff them is interesting because they're making football decisions. Boise's the one that surprised me, honestly, and they've got a pretty good basketball program. But Boise going, I thought, would be the catalyst to all the schools that cared about football going. Because if you took them all, right, you'd have a league that would surpass the American now at this point. I don't know that they're there yet. I think Memphis and Tulane probably tell. And the other thing about Memphis and Tulane is that's probably more about, okay, great, can you go get a new football deal that beats the one we've got? What's the reality of that happening? Probably not very high. You know, I think the networks are in the business of shooting big with the bigger. I don't think there's an appetite. The basketball thing is a fact. And the reason I love it is because if you're a Big 12 fan, that's now two leagues that are telling you they think there's value in basketball in these TV deals. And I think that's good. I think that's good for the Big 12. Even though they didn't get Gonzaga, which would have been awesome, I don't mind that Gonzaga is going to the Pac-12. I don't mind there being another good basketball league like that. I think it's okay. And I don't want to see the Pac-12 die either. So if this is their lifeblood, then so be it. That's fine. But that news is out there. Pac-12 looks like it's going to gain Gonzaga, not the Big 12. I suspect that there wasn't a huge appetite for Gonzaga amongst the Big 12 member schools, and that's why that probably hasn't been done. Just like UConn, there wasn't much of an appetite there. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Dan Israel joins us. What does he think about this wide receiver situation? What does he know about Rashee Rice? We'll ask him both of those things. We'll look ahead to the game this weekend against the Saints. It's all coming for you. Hour number two of Sports Daily starts with a little Chiefs talk right after this.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Caught! Touchdown! Kansas City!
Hey, Chiefs Kingdom, we have you covered. Joining Sports Daily Live, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are joined by our Chiefs insider, Dan Israel, to kick off hour number two. The IHOP hotline will be back open for you in just a little bit at 869-1240. That's brought to you by IHOP. You can celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP House faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. Dan, it is a 4-0 start, first and foremost, but it is a troubling 4-0 start. This is a strange year in the league. The Chiefs keep finding ways to win these games, but at what cost is the term I keep using. Now Rashee Rice will be out at least for a little while. What do you know about Rashee Rice? Is this all just the medical procedure, or what's happening in the last 12 hours?
Yeah, there's uncertainty. I mean, that's just all there is to it. And I think that probably plays towards a more favorable outcome if it's not clearly a tear in a year-long recovery. You know, I feel like the uncertainty, you don't go get a second opinion when there's just undeniable proof, right? So I feel like the uncertainty is probably going to be a good thing, but we just don't know yet. I also think the other thing that's weird about this, Jacob, is, you know, he hasn't served his suspension yet. So if he is out a year, he then could serve a 6, maybe 8-game suspension.
Yeah.
We could be looking at 2026 or the 2025 postseason before we even see Rice again. It's a really kind of eerie start to the season. So young in the season, and Chiefs aren't usually plagued with these injuries, but this one's been biting us hard.
Do you think, Dan, that until there is concrete plans of kind of what that looks like, and I know that from a NFL suspension standpoint, that will be down the road. But until there's really a strong idea on what's going to be happening with Rashee Rice, that we don't see the Chiefs be overly aggressive in at least bringing in somebody from the outside. I know Andy Reid mentioned that, really, at least in the interim, the plan is to try to spread the ball around more, I think, which is kind of a given. Do you anticipate that at least right away any changes are made with the roster, or is it kind of like wait and see?
I would suspect, knowing Brett Veach, he was on the phone in the third quarter of the Chargers game, and I bet he's constantly calling. I think if they find the right guy, I mean, there's all kinds of rumors. You know, the Panthers' Johnson has been rumored. Amari Cooper's been rumored. There's just a ton. I don't know why people are bringing up Keenan Allen. I don't know why that would be a situation. But I think if they find the right guy, Tommy, they'll go for it right now. Because I think the one thing, even with the uncertainty on Rice, I don't think he's going to be back in a few weeks. You know, so I think it would be an extended kind of absence. I also think that if they can find the right guy, meaning somebody they think can fit into the role, not just the role of what Rice played, but also the understanding the offense, they can come up to speed quick with the vernacular of the offense. Because let's face it, that's the difficulty you have when you bring in a guy from the outside cold like that. Much easier to do that on the defensive side than the offensive side, and especially with the wide receiver, where you've got to not only he's got to get literate in the playbook, but there has to kind of become this timing thing between him and a quarterback and his other players, something that usually starts in the off season or usually starts in preseason. Now you've got to do it in real time and practice where, would he be a number one type Rice receiver with Worthy there? I don't know. Worthy looked really good in the last half of the game. And so I really don't know what the role is here. I'm not ready to pull the ripcord. I think there's people, you know, is the Chiefs' three-peat chances over? I don't agree with that. I mean, we won a Super Bowl with much less than we have even now, still today. So I guess it just kind of remains to be seen. But I think Beach is probably working the phones.
My issue with the rosters it's currently constructed is I don't know the player that fills Rice's role. I don't think that's Worthy. I think Worthy has a different role. Juju kind of filled that role a couple of years ago, but he doesn't look like he has that in the tank. I don't know if there's anybody on the roster that fills what Rice has done, which has been a target monster and in sort of a safety net for Mahomes while Kelce continues to be covered up the way he is. That's what I think is a little bit different, is because that specific role. I mean, do you see Worthy playing that role? Because I don't see Worthy playing that role, right? And he doesn't have the same body type. I don't know.
He's definitely more slight than Rice. But I feel like the way coach game plans is he takes the asset of the player and then he uses it against the other team. And I think one of the things we saw out of Worthy was he came off the line of scrimmage and just outran everybody. He just flat outran everybody. And I think anytime you can stretch a defense vertically, meaning that it require, you know, a typical defense might line up 20 yards deep. If you can stretch that safety back to 25 yards or even 30 yards, and you start forcing them to you know, cover much more field, that the gaps become larger, the seams become immense. And so it opens it up for everybody. So I do think they can use his speed to do some of the things that Rice was doing. I don't think he's a, you know, a double move kind of guy like Rice was. That would be have to fall on Juju at this point, or Sky or McColl. I mean, one of those guys could step up. I mean, the Chiefs are still waiting for Sky to step up. I've kind of written him off, so I don't know.
That didn't go well.
It's not a good plan, does it? It doesn't sound like a good plan, no. Does it?
We've debated a couple of times, Dan, the likelihood that the Chiefs would swing big at wide receiver. It's an interesting dynamic. We know a couple of things. We know that Brett Veach is not afraid to trade a first-round pick. He's done it several times. We also know he's invested a first-round pick, a second-round pick, and a third-round pick at that position the last 3 years. Do you think there's any inclination at some point to shoot big as teams kind of fall out of contention? We get a further diagnosis on Rice. What do you think the chances are the Chiefs go big at that spot versus just trying to fix it until they can, you know, kind of get to the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, again, it depends on the situation, but they don't have enough cap room to really swing, you know, an $80 million receiver, that's for sure. So I think, you know, when you're talking about a long-term deal and a signing bonus, and that becomes a lot more difficult deal to do, especially probably mid-season, but just with the cap the way it is, I think it would be a much more difficult deal than to maybe acquire a guy who's in the final year of his contract. And, you know, like you take Johnson and the Panthers. He's in the final year of his contract. The Panthers, I mean, I know it's September and there's a lot of football left, but if you watch the Panthers play, there is just absolutely nothing there that says, hey, we're going to make a run for this thing in the postseason. Yeah. They could move on from him, maybe get a pick and trade a guy who's a number one receiver and let him finish out his contract here and then hit the free agency market. I think something like that makes a lot more sense, Jacob, than a long-term deal. But man, I'll tell you, you know, Veach has been a master at doing deals. I didn't think he could get done. I wasn't sure how he was going to get all the stuff done that he's done so far. So, and I certainly don't want to limit him, but I think it's less likely.
I also know that, you know, the organization puts a premium on players that have had experience in the system before to get them ingrained in, you know, what they do offensively and have, you know, players that have worked with Patrick Mahomes before. I mean, keep in mind that the last in-season trade for a wide receiver the Chiefs did was bringing back Mecole Hardman. You know, obviously having that familiarity with Mahomes and in the offense and all that, when there were probably other receivers that might have been available and on the market for Veach and Reed to bring back. So I do know they place a premium on that sort of thing. I think that one of the factors that does maybe alleviate a little bit of the concern with Rashee Rice going down, at least in my mind, was seeing the volume in which Travis Kelce was back involved in the offense on Sunday. That was important. And that was something that I know that everybody has been locked in on basically since the start of the season. And definitely something that it looked to me had become a priority and a point of focus for this offense. And I would imagine, Dan, something that they've absolutely got to ride on continuing now, especially with Rashee Rice out.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I think you're right. I think in the Chargers game, you saw that the interception that Mahomes threw was he was trying to feed to Kelce. You know, I mean, he's trying to get Kelce involved in it. And Kelce's always been a Charger killer anyway. I feel like he was going to get that ball at some point. And we saw very early in the game them trying to, you know, activate him. And I really think, you know, Kelce's a team player, and I think that he would have been happy with the wins. But I think just like everybody else who's played a sport, you want to feel like you had a significant role in that win at some point. You don't mind a game or two going by, but I think they were just literally trying to keep Kelce in it and going, you know, to LA where he's had so much success. I think it made a lot of sense. Now I think they're forced. I mean, it's just their hands are forced. They're kind of – I don't want to say we're back to 2023 because I don't think that's fair. There's still I mean, Worthy is still there and capable of doing good things, but Kelsey's going to have to be kind of that number one role again. I at least it feels like it to me. We'll see what coach dials up, and certainly no more creative coach than Coach Reed. He'll come up with something, but if you're telling me I have to rely on Travis Kelce to win these games, I'm good with it.
Yeah, I think I am too. I think he showed that, and it's all about Worthy. We're spending all of this time with this. The Chiefs are 4-0. The reason they're 4-0 is because they don't need to throw the ball as much. I don't think they want to throw the ball as much. They want to run the ball. They want to play good defense. It's what took them to a Super Bowl last year, and it's what they're doing well again this year. Running the ball. I was wrong. Kareem Hunt looked good. I mean, he looked the best of the three that they've got right now, I think, is the primary back. And I do think he probably provides them the ability to do what they want to do offensively, which is control the clock and play good defense.
Yeah, I was really surprised, to be honest. I didn't think he'd play that much of a role. I think somewhat contributing to that was Steele's fumble. You know, I'm not sure Hunt would have gotten quite as many snaps, but I liked how he ran, and I was impressed. You know, if we can have that kind of bruiser guy that when we're, you know, down and goal to go, you give it to Hunt and he pops it into the end zone like he was doing for Cleveland, I'm okay with that. And so I think that's a good thing. I do think you know, mentioned Jacob, the defense. I think you look at the Chargers game, they didn't score after the first quarter. Yeah. I mean, this defense is already kind of returning to its form. I don't want to say I've forgotten about Legarius Sneed, but it's amazing to me that for them to do what they did. And look, you know, the Chargers, were they full strength? Absolutely not. Were they capable of doing damage? I think so. I think Justin Herbert's always capable of doing damage. So, but I was just so impressed with the defense and that performance. When you look at that and you look at the way they played last season, boy, there's just no reason to think you're not going to be in all these games.
Speaking of the defense, Dan, I think that one of the major factors that the Chiefs can hang their hat on through the first four games is the way that they have stopped the run. Defensively, that's been massive, and especially with the lead backs for all four of the teams that they face so far, all of them are pretty good. I mean, obviously Derrick Henry is amazing, and then you've got
beast. Yeah.
Zach Moss and Bijan Robinson, and then of course J.K. Dobbins against the Chargers. Combined, those four guys have averaged under 3 yards a carry against the Chiefs defense. That's not a portion defensively for Kansas City that I think really a lot of people thought about going into this season as being a major strength. It was more about what will the secondary look like without Legarius Sneed? What will the pass rush look like opposite of Chris Jones? But really, sneakily, that run defense has been kind of the key factor for the Chiefs defensively.
Tommy, if you and I were eating dinner prior to the season and I told you the Chiefs were going to have a good run defense, you would have drug tested me.
100%,
there's just no question 100%. About it. The Chiefs don't have a good run. They never have a good run. And I might add, all of that without Willie Gay Jr., which is amazing because he was such an explosive side-to-side guy. You could really rely on him to thump the runner if it was a run and still get into coverage if it wasn't. And so I feel like certainly Nick Bolton's answering the call, but they held J.K. Dobbins, in my opinion, without Mike Dana. Chris Jones had a great game, 2 sacks. He ties Justin Houston for 4th all-time on the Chiefs list. You look at these guys and their ability to stop the run, and for whatever reason, it seems this resurgence by all of the teams, not just the Kansas City Chiefs, not just, you know, the Baltimore Ravens. All teams seem to be kind of returning to that run game. It's a very good thing for them to be able to stop the run and still somehow yet limit big-time quarterbacks like Joe Burrow, like, you know, Jackson, like Herbert. You know, I don't quite understand Spagnuolo's genius. I just know I recognize it as such, you know?
It's the greatest thing that could have happened to this team is the defense doesn't appear to have lost a step. What about the Saints? They come into Kansas City. It's Monday Night Football. Another great running back they'll have to stop.
Yep.
I'm not as in on the Saints as some people. I think they're a little bit a phantom good this year, but everybody is a big test in the NFL. We see it every week. So nothing for granted. What do you see there with the Saints?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. They need to prove a little more to me. You know, I know they've had a good September, but that one game that they did lose, just they looked incredibly weak, in my opinion, in that game particularly. So I'm sure the Chiefs are looking at that and saying, you know, hey, here's how we can beat these guys. And I also feel like when I don't know how I feel about either Carr brothers. You know, I mean, I thought David was going to come in and light up the league, and he never did. And so, you know, I just, you never know what you're going to get there. And I know they have a little bit of a two-headed monster that they like to play with, you know, Hill and stuff. But I feel like the burden is on the burden's on the Saints to prove that they can hang with the world champion Chiefs more so than it is for the Chiefs to say, boy, I hope we can beat the Chargers, and especially Monday Night Football in Arrowhead. This is not this game's not being played in New Orleans. This is being played at GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium. It is just an electric environment on these primetime games, and our players fuel from that. They know what to expect. I really feel like the everything's kind of, it should be our game to win.
Dan, speaking of having dinner before the season starts and talking about things that are crazy, if I had told you before the season that after four games, the only two undefeated teams in the league are the Chiefs and the Vikings with Sam Darnold at quarterback, you would have told me that I was crazy there too.
I would have said, is Sam Darnold still in the league? And, you know, I was watching my son used to work for the Rams. And so I know quite a bit about Jared Goff, and I was watching him play last night, and he had that, you know, Amon St. Brown threw the touchdown pass to Goff, and Goff looked like he was struggling just to run. But Sam Darnold has been amazing. You know, I mean, the reason I brought up Goff was he had a perfect game last night, 18 of 18. That's pretty impressive. And Sam Darnold's been playing that way. He's just been so reliable, so accurate. And I feel like that is just a completely different Sam Darnold than what we saw in his earlier outings. But you're right. Not only what I have told you, well, that's not even going to make it through the month of September. I would never have guessed them to be undefeated. They look really strong, man. I mean, right now they look maybe stronger than the Lions to me.
Let's look back to the Jets and the Panthers and some of these spots. It helps to have Justin Jefferson and Addison and Aaron Jones and a pretty good offensive line like that. You know, that does play a part in what you can do at quarterback. All right, Dan, Monday Night Football, anything special you guys have on tap for us?
We're hoping to get some big time broadcast talent down in the trick with Arrowhead is now they've split television and radio, and we're like six floors apart, which it makes it a little difficult. So we end up running back and forth, but I've got the calls in, so we'll see what we get out of it.
Nobody's taking the stairs. All right, Dan.
That's right.
No matter what.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
4-0, all the other stuff we'll keep an eye on, but 4-0 is 4-0 in this league. Just remember last year.
That's right.
If you want to get too dicey with it. We appreciate it, Dan. We'll talk again next week.
Have a good Tuesday, guys.
Executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider. Always appreciate those visits and that insight. He's with us, Tommy. Who knows what Veach has got cooking there, if much at all. I think all of us sort of think not in the immediate short term, but perhaps thinking long term. It's a style thing. I think they can afford to go big splash, but more than anything, it's just stylistically. Can Justin Watson play that role? Maybe. I think that's your first shot. I think it's the first thing you do. But as we said yesterday, and we didn't ask Dan this, but I think he would agree, look for more tight end throws, not just to Kelsey, but to Gray. Look for more, you know, running back throws.
Don't forget, Fortson is back with Kansas City as well. So
the numbers, Tommy, I ran these yesterday. The numbers of Rice versus the other receivers are staggering. It's something like 27 targets essentially through three games for Rice because he didn't really play Sunday. 24 targets for all the other receivers combined, including Worthy. Like, it is so much all Rice and has been. That's where it's like, well, what are they going to do? I don't know that you just plug somebody in there, but I do think we see a different... The tight ends are going to be real... That's what we saw Sunday. That's what they did in a Band-Aid situation that game. Why not try it again? Throw to these tight ends. They got a rookie there that they invested a lot in, too. We'll see. We'll come back. We'll catch our breath a little bit. Pete Rose died yesterday. Maybe some thoughts there. We will get more on the Royals. Baseball playoffs as a whole, Tommy's team's in. The Braves made it. We can look ahead, kind of give you some predictions. A lot on the table here. We're back opened up, which means the IHOP hotline's open for you at 869-1240. Let's set up our HTO giveaway here as we go to break. All you got to do to win some free iced tea, more than 20 flavors to choose from. We'll get you a free cup of tea and a free coffee, iced or hot coffee drinks all over the place at HTO. These are good for any of the three Wichita Metro locations. Just text the keyword tea, T-E-A, right now to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. More Sports Daily right after this. Portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. All kinds of fun stuff happening out there this week at the restaurant, Tommy. Get ready for it. The chef special, barbecue pork ribs, baked beans, potato salad with a salmon and cream cheese flatbread. I haven't even had the flatbreads. I know you've had some of those and you say they're really good. I need to try one. But ribs, baked beans, and potato salad, Tommy. Just dip that rib right in that potato salad. Oh, man. It's good stuff. It's good stuff out there at Crestview.
I'm going to pretend that you didn't say that, but that's okay. Sounds really good, so I'm in on that.
I visibly saw your stomach turn. No, I say this all the time about bar. Get out to check Crestview, by the way. The restaurant's incredible. It's a great bar, too, as well as all the golf and all the other fun stuff out there. Give them a call. Tell them we sent you. We appreciate their support of the program. Say this all the time about barbecue. Barbecue to me is like pizza. There's not bad barbecue. There's not bad pizza. There's better barbecue and better pizza, of course. But most of the time, and I doubt you agree with me on this, most of the time with a barbecue joint, I base like how good it is because I really like most barbecue sauces. Like I tend to lean spicier, right? But it's the sides for me. Like, how good are your sides? How good your potato salad? How good are your beans? How good is your coleslaw? That kind of stuff. That's typically what drives me to barbecue more even so than like the meat, because all the meat and sauce is usually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Like I've had some not great meat before. If it's right. Not super tender or whatever, like that's not great. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you've got to have really solid sides to complement and make it like the full experience. I mean, I can get down on some barbecue, like whether we're talking ribs or brisket or pulled pork, sausage, hot links, whatever. Like I'm absolutely in.
When we were driving to Minnesota, we stopped in Des Moines, and I wish I could remember the name of the place off the top of my head. It was as good as I've had. Like wouldn't have expected Iowa barbecue. But it was really, and they had all their posters up on the wall of all the competitions they've won, and it was packed lineup. It was just like an off the highway stop we made. We didn't know anything about it. We were just like, all right, we might as well stop and eat. It was really, really good. And a bigger reason for that were their sides. Des Moines, who'd have thunk it? They enter the chat. Yes.
Jad's got something that he wants to add.
Oh, Jad. Okay. Yes. Jad.
I just wanted to say that last Friday, my parents and I had some barbecue at a place I hadn't yet tried. Here in town, relatively new. It's over by Riverfront Stadium. And turns out that the guy that runs the place is a big Sports Daily listener.
Hey!
Good to know. Yeah.
What are we like? Are we talking like which place was it?
It used to be the stadium.
Okay,
the bar.
Gotcha. And it's a brand new.
New
place. I'll check that out.
Just so I know he's listening right now because he says he listens every day while he's while he's cooking up some really good barbecue. So hi Bruce, how you doing?
Bruce, hey, thanks Bruce. For listening. You know what? Honestly, I know our show is on in the morning. I mean, I can get down on barbecue at any hour of the day. So
for breakfast, me too,
for sure. So Bruce, if you ever if you ever have some extra barbecue. I'd be more than happy to take you up on that during the show.
Oh, yeah.
And Jacob, you asked about sides. Let me tell you something. Everybody's had the, like if you go to a church dinner or a funeral or something like that, you've had the potato casserole that's always there.
Yeah.
Imagine the absolute best version of that you've ever had. And then
I'm in.
And then throw something that's better than that in there. They have a potato side that's like that. It's fantastic.
Potatoes need to be there, and I like all the kinds of potato salad and potato casseroles. I typically prefer yellow potato salad to like German potato salad, but I do love German potato salad. Something I've tried with barbecue the last few days. I had this in Kansas City the last time I was there, and then it was also in Des Moines. It's like the cucumber and onion thing.
Sure, yeah.
My mom always made that, and hers was more creamy. But any of them. I'm glad that's being introduced now because it is a perfect barbecue complement to the sweet sauce or whatever. It is replacing coleslaw for me, which is saying a lot because I like coleslaw.
You know, as we're talking barbecue, I just have this thought in my head, and I don't know if you've caught any of these episodes in the past, but on College Game Day, when they're at a football stadium or whatever, they're from time to time they'll have like a whole barbecue spread. Like they'll be in Tuscaloosa doing a Bama game, and they've got people bringing out just platters of barbecue and putting it on the table. And so you've got Pat McAfee and Kirk Herbstreit and all these guys like devouring barbecue while they're doing a live television show.
Yeah.
And I mean, number one, it looks amazing, but number two. And you're on TV, I'm not, but even just doing radio, as much as I love barbecue, I love food in general, it'd be hard for me to eat and do a show at the same time.
There's five of them. So, you just kind of take your turns there. I've done a lot of road shows, not to that magnitude, but like road broadcast type things. And you eat a lot on them. Always. Everybody's always got food for you. I've said it before. And the sports guys always end up in the eating contest. Like, I throw the sports guys into it. Food's a big part of those.
Got to make that a tradition on this program. Just have maybe when we do our Friday football picks, we just have platters of barbecue that just show up.
That'd be good.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Don't have to twist my arm. I'd be in. Okay, let's look at the postseason, Tommy, the Major League Baseball postseason. As we get news that Pete Rose has passed, and there is a lot out there on Pete Rose. I think there are people better equipped than me anyway. He was a generation before me. I loved watching Pete Rose clips. I loved watching Pete Rose play baseball. I have talked to Pete Rose. I've interviewed Pete Rose. I think it's a shame he's not in the Hall of Fame. It's unfortunate that in the wake of his passing, that's where we immediately go, but it is. I mean, it's what, his legacy is, and I think that's unfair a little bit, and I know people disagree with that, but you've got your hits king, you've got Charlie Hustle, you've got the guy that stylistically is a whole lot of people's favorite player that while he was playing didn't do anything to sully the game. Keep him out as a manager, whatever. Pete Rose needs to be in the Hall of Fame. And he didn't do himself a lot of favors in the aftermath. I get it. I've been in a contentious interview with him before. All of that being said, he needs to be in the Hall of Fame because when he passes, like that's not what we need to be talking about. We need to be celebrating the greatness he brought to the game, in my opinion. That's what I feel like anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Pete Rose, when you look back on it retrospectively, is that in the same way that he didn't do himself any favors, I mean, that's one way to kind of look at it. But on the flip side, you could also say that he was unapologetically himself. And he was going to, basically just stand firm in who he was and what he did and what he felt like was right and what he felt like was wrong. The world has changed significantly. And so, you know, what he was banned from baseball for doing that he ultimately came clean about and being a part of that now is commonplace, not in that regard, not in what he did, but just the overall thought process of sports wagering and sports betting is now so commonplace. I saw somebody joking around on social media. It kind of went viral of, them saying that they couldn't wait until, you know, Major League Baseball does a moment of silence on the field today for Pete Rose. And that moment of silence is presented by FanDuel. That sort of thing in today's zeitgeist when it comes to sports wagering, because there's just been a 180 turn over the last, you know, couple decades, but especially in the last few years about sports gambling. So it's unfortunate that they were not able to come to terms before he passed away. It's also unfortunate that, and I think you mentioned this, it's unfortunate that that's the first thing that you think about and you talk about when Pete Rose passes away, not the fact that he's the all-time hits leader, not the fact that he passed Ty Cobb, not the fact that he set all these records and was one of the best baseball players to ever play the game. It's that everybody's going to look at what happened with him, you know, 3 decades ago.
Baseball should have gotten out of the way of that. I do think I don't want to downplay what he did. What he did, even in today's gambling landscape, would get him banned from baseball, right? Like you still can't do what he did, even with the embracing of gambling and betting on the sport. You can't do it when you're involved in it. And that's what happened. And that's the part that, like, what I don't understand is why we could never separate the two things. Right. Separate the accomplishments from that misguided deed. There was no indication that it had anything to do with anything he did on the field. So just separate the two things. He did this really bad thing. Right. He was also one of the greatest baseball players that ever lived. It's not that hard. Like, it's not that hard to do that. And the unfortunate reality of the Hall of Fame is, had he kissed up to writers that vote on this kind of thing, he probably would have been in by now. Had he kissed up to commissioners.
Right.
Right. And then he'd probably be in, but he wouldn't do it. And so it is what it is, but one of the all-time great sports personalities on the field dies yesterday, along with Dikembe Mutombo. That's a tough day in the sports world. Tough day in the sports world. Let's take a quick break. We'll let that be a break before we come back and talk about the Major League Baseball playoffs. It's Sports Daily. The IHOP hotline is back open for you at 869-1240. We'll come back. We'll look at Royals today. What about the rest of the postseason? Tommy's Braves are in a bit of a stressful Monday afternoon. We'll talk about it all when we return on Sports Daily. Not in the car? No problem. You can listen live to KFH on the Odyssey app and at KFHradio.com.
Dude, you gotta hear this. Hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Reminder, you get Royals baseball. The playoffs begin. Game one, Colt Reagans, Corbin Burns. Pregame coverage begins at 2:30 right here on KFH. Bob and Jeff will get you primed up for a half hour before the game. We're ready for the postseason. We're ready for the Royals. We've talked to Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman. If you missed anything, you can listen to it all on the Odyssey app. Let's look at the rest of the postseason here, Tommy. Your Braves make it. Stressful Monday for you. You know, ultimately, that was a very likely scenario. That game one was wacky. It was likely until Chris Sale got scratched in game two. Like, everything else was like, all right, it's fine. They'll have Sale going in game two. They'll be fine. Woo, that was tight.
Yeah, it was a roller coaster. It was an emotional day yesterday. I don't know if I've ever been on the edge of my seat for a doubleheader on a Monday quite like I was yesterday in that two-game set with the Braves and the Mets. That eighth inning was insane. And then the ninth inning with Lindor hitting ultimately the game-winning home run. At that point, you know, that game is over and I'm like, okay, the Mets are in. Yeah, the Braves, their backs are up against the wall, but at least they've got the guy that's going to be the National League Cy Young winner. And then, nope, about 20 minutes before game time, He's got back spasms, and Chris Sale is not pitching in game two. I don't know what that means. I know that it sounds like Brian Snitker says that he's not going to pitch in the wild card round against the Padres. Jeez. But I don't know what that's going to mean, assuming, you know, if the Braves make it any further. But they were able to get it done by the skin of their teeth. It's wild because both of those teams, you know, immediately following that doubleheader had to get on planes and travel. The Mets had to go to Milwaukee. The Braves had to take a cross-country trip to San Diego for games today, which is just, it's wild the way that that all panned out. I don't have a ton of optimism with the Braves in general because they had to go through, you know, a lot of their pitchers. You know, Schwellenbach pitched in game one and they had to use relievers and that sort of thing. Then they have to go cross country and take on the Padres without Chris Sale. So I'm not exactly sure what they're going to do. But I'm glad they made it in. They kept that streak of seven seasons alive, but I don't have a lot of optimism.
Weird things happen in the postseason. By the way, your Braves taking on my wife's Padres. She's from San Diego. She kind of gets into it this time of year. I will need to inform her that they made the playoffs. She will not know that. But that, you know, there that is. I made a it wasn't a joke. It was a real prediction. It was kind of a joke, I'll be honest. I was texting some buddies. This would have been probably 2 months ago, and they were asking, they're making World Series predictions, and somebody said, oh, Yankees, Dodgers in the most watched, you know, World Series of all time. And I said, how about Royals, Brewers in the least watched World Series of all time as far as viewership? I kind of liked that at the time if they could both get there, and they have. The Brewers are in this round. They'll host the Mets. The Tigers and the Astros are the other series. Good luck guessing at that. Detroit's got some pressure to win this first game with Skubal for sure. I would love to see the Astros lose. I think Royals fans would love to see the Astros lose. And the Tigers are a great story. I think the two great stories in the postseason right now are the Tigers and the Royals. I don't, you know, I don't have a great prediction for. I think the baseball playoffs are so hard to predict. So hard. I would just tell you this. As every game will be played today, right? Like every team plays their games today.
Yeah,
like
the ones that obviously are not on buys.
I would tell you this. I think that the Royals have as good a chance as any team. This is what we've sort of been waiting for with them. Am I predicting them to win the World Series? I don't know. I mean, I hope they do for a lot of reasons. But I think they're capable of it. And I think a lot of times some, you know, teams will get in and you're like, I can't really see it. But then those kind, like the Diamondbacks last year, and they made it anyway, right? So the baseball postseason is so weird, and streaky teams reign supreme a lot of the time here. And I think that there is at least an outside chance the Royals are on a good streak. There are parts of the team that are on a good streak. It's really all, can the offense kind of heat up at the right time? But this is what we've been waiting for, Tommy. Their starting rotation was built for this right here. Their lineup with Pasquantino is built for this right here, right? You only need usually in a postseason game a few hits. Last year was a little weird. There was a lot of offense last year. Most of the time, you just need a little bit of offense, right? You need it to be timed right. You need great starting pitching. And the Royals seem capable of doing, and usually you need good bullpen play. And the Royals have all those components at the moment.
I think what's wild about this season in the playoffs is that there's not one or two dominant teams that are going into it. I mean, any team has the chance to go far. And it was kind of similar last season. I mean, look at the World Series matchup between the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. Like, neither one of those teams were dominant going in, and they made it to the World Series. But there were a couple of teams, at least, you know, last year that had won a bunch of games. The Dodgers were, you know, one of them, obviously. That's not the way that this season has panned out. I mean, you've got teams that, I mean, there was not a single 100-win team in Major League Baseball this year. And so what's crazy to me about that is, you know, you're talking about large market teams. You're talking about small market teams. You're talking about large payrolls, small payrolls. You're talking about teams that lean on their pitching, teams that lean on their offense, teams that lean on their defense or their bullpen. Like, you've got multiple different ways for teams to make the playoffs this season. It's not always like that. And so that's what makes it so exciting. I think that, you know, if you compare that with the NFL, there's kind of at least somewhat of a blueprint for teams to be wildly successful. you have to hit quarterback correctly. You have to have the right quarterback on your team to lead them, you know, lead teams to the playoffs and beyond. Look at the Chiefs, for example. It's not quite that way right now in Major League Baseball. There's not one blueprint for success. Teams can get it done in a variety of different ways, like the Royals have in their own way. And even with the way that they've stumbled over the last month of the season, they still found their way into the playoffs, and they still feel pretty good about their chances going into it with the way their pitching has been, and then, of course, getting Vinny Pasquantino back. So that's what makes this time of year, October baseball, so much fun, because you're going to see different styles clashing amongst all the teams that are in the playoffs right now. And honestly, this season more so than probably any other, it's literally anybody's ballgame.
Yeah, it is, which probably tells us it's going to be Yankees Dodgers, right? Like, that's just the way it goes. Like, you'll get the predictable here. Can you make a case for any team of any of the teams that are in Phillies, Dodgers, Yankees, Guardians, the teams that got byes in the long, like, does anybody stand out to you as a team that has no chance?
A team that has no chance, or a team that I would lean on? I mean, because I think that...
No. The other. I think we agree, like, that everyone see... Like, is there a team in there that you're like, yeah, it's just, that's not going to be the team?
Yeah, I think depending on... I mentioned the Braves, and they're my team. I mean, they've been absolutely dismantled, you know, with injuries and all of that, and their rotation going into this series is not ideal. In fact, I think I read that there was some consideration being made, and I don't know if they made a decision yet, but some consideration about, like, even calling up a pitcher from the minors to start in game one of the wild card round, which is clearly not ideal. So knowing that, I mean, I'd probably give them the least likely chance, but who knows?
So I'm looking at this right now. I'm just pulling up everybody's odds right now. God, this seems great. So the Royals and the Tigers have the longest odds. The Tigers at 30-1, the Royals at 28. The Braves have 23-1 odds. They're with the Mets. Then you go all the way up the ladder. You get to the Dodgers and the Yankees as the most likely. That shouldn't surprise anybody. But it does feel like 30-1 for the Royals seems too long to me. Like, their chances seem much greater than that.
I'd throw a couple of bucks on that. I mean, who knows? I mean, like, that'd be fun to do.
What was my joke series? Let's do this. Let's see what Kansas City. Oh, see, but I can't put them both in the World Series. I was going to say, Kansas City and the Brewers, can I put them together?
Probably.
I can get 131-1 odds.
There you go.
That the Royals and the Brewers make it. Problem with that is, Tommy, I already have the Royals at 200-1 to win it.
By the way, I really, really like the Phillies. I don't like them, but I like them to win the World Series. They've got a scary offense from top to bottom. Harper
with
Wheeler and Nola at the top. Like, they are stacked. They would probably be my team, you know, that I think will win.
3 o'clock, folks. 3:08. Pre-game coverage begins at 2:30. Here we go. We'll be back tomorrow to talk all about it.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays? The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.